For the 23-24 season, Talking Wolves are proudly sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game.
Green King Sport venues are shown every single one of Wolves' televised fixtures over the course of the season. So instead of turning to the internet for a dodgy stream, why not get together with your mates, go to a Green King Sport venue and get closer to the action.
Now this season, Green King Sport have launched a Green King Sport Instagram page. It's home of the fan content, loads of giveaways and competitions on there. They've actually got a Champions League final tickets giveaway on there at the minute. Hopefully they're doing it next season because you might see Gary O'Neill's Wolf side in that, the way things are going. But there's loads of other prizes on there, signed shirts and much more.
So to make sure you're first to know about all the action over on the Green King Sport page, go and drop them a follow on their Instagram. And obviously you'll be helping us out here at Talking Wolves as well. Welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast, here to react to another fantastic win over the weekend. My name is Dave, and alongside me today, we have got two guests. It's been a little bit of a lonely show over the last couple of weeks or so, but we'll kick off with Mr. Jordan Russell. Jordan, how are you keeping, mate?
I'm all good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, all good. I mean, he's just taken off a little woolly hat. He must have been freezing up in that loft again there. But good. Been up to much this week, Jordan?
Not really. Saw the game. Emma's in Dubai, so she's back on Thursday. So I've literally had the house to myself since last Tuesday. So just been watching shitloads of sport. Shitload of sport. Yeah, for sure. Amongst other things. And it's been all good.
Takeaways. What's the takeaway orders?
In the last week, I've had a Nando's, Indian,
Bosh.
A chippy,
Bosh.
And I had a Mackey's as well.
Oh, my word.
I've had four takeaways in a week, which is not good.
That is like single man behaviour, isn't it, really? But whilst Emma's away, then, you know. To be fair, I can't say, what was it? I had two grillets in 2 days a couple of weeks ago, didn't I? So, you know, I can't say much, to be fair. Finn, you're returning. How are you, mate? How you been?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, the one time I'm actually away from my usual desk as well, so sorry for the new location. And I hope you can all hear me okay. I've literally just got my AirPods, so we're winging it, but it was such a great game. And we've got a lot to talk about, the football. We've got the sleep out to talk about. I thought I had to make an appearance from Jem's parents' front room. So, yeah, we'll give this a go.
No, you've been up to much. Obviously, you're with your missus is at the moment due to medical reasons, but for her, not for you, but been up to much else other than that.
I saw you Wednesday night. We went for two shouts already in the first minutes of the podcast, but we went to grill it. And then Jen was complaining of a pain in her stomach. I said, oh, just have a nap, love. And it turns out it was appendicitis, so she couldn't sleep that one off. I'm taking an hour break from being her carer. She's recovering all right though, so it's all good. Full speed ahead. I thought, to be fair, she was meant to be operated on when the Wolves game, it was meant to be 1 o'clock, and obviously we kicked off at 12:30. And then I think it ended up delayed another like 2 days. Cheers, Rishi. But yeah, it's all good.
Oh, well, you mentioned it there as well, the sleep out. It's come around quick. It is actually this coming Friday. I really do appreciate everyone that is sent in their donations. We've raised over £400 on our individual page so far, but any other donations between now and Friday would honestly really, really be appreciated. So I'll make sure I leave a link to it in the top of the description of the podcast. And obviously, if you're going to be there, come and say hello to me and Finn. And we won't share our sleeping bag with you, but you know, very well. We'll see how the night
goes. You got that double one for us, Dave, this year.
Yeah, we'll see how the night goes. But yes, lads, what a win. Another fantastic 3 points for the Wolves. We needed that as well after that game against Sheffield United and obviously going into the international break as well. Jord, Gary O'Neill shifted the lineup slightly. It's pretty well, it is exactly how I said on the podcast, on the preview, sorry. And on the podcast, we mentioned it as well in regards to Bellegarde returning and obviously João Gomes coming back in for Lamina. I think he pretty much made the right decision with those two, didn't he?
Yeah, Gomez in for Doyle, not Lamina.
So, sorry, yeah, my bad. Go on. Yeah,
my bad. But no, sorry, yeah, just because, you know, there'll be someone in the comments saying, oh, you said Lamina. but no, it was, you know, it was, I think it was sort of the right changes in all fairness. I thought that Gomez had a very good game. I thought, you know, his abilities to disrupt the play and get around the pitch and shuttle and harass sort of helped us play, you know, against that Tottenham press they've got against Bissouma and Saar, and then kept them relatively quiet. Bellegarde, yeah, I think, you know, he came in and he had a, you know, as predicted. And I think he had a solid game. I don't think he had a great game. I think he was okay. But he's just coming back from injury as well. But what was something that I really, well, I liked seeing during the game as well, was it seemed to be that we went into more of a 5-3-2 out of possession as well. So I matched up against the Spurs 3. And I know, again, it's only a little thing, but people still doubting sort of Gary O'Neill's, like, coaching ability or tactical ability. He did change it in game a lot. We kept going from like a 3-4-3 into sort of a 5-3-2 out of shape as well. So it was nice to see him. Bellegarde can play inside a little bit more. So I guess with, you know, the unfortunate Neto injury, it does allow Bellegarde to come in and give us another dimension, I guess, when we're out of possession.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about Bellegarde a lot more, because I think it was an interesting game for him, because I think, like you said, I didn't think he was unbelievable. I think he had some good moments. I think he had some frustrating moments, but it was, again, a sort of mixed report on him. But we'll talk about him a lot more. Finn, I mean, we better get the worst bit out of the way first. Spurs really, you know, making a good start. Try and talk us through what you thought in regards to the defensive side of things. But obviously, it was Pedro Porro into Brennan Johnson. I mean, when that went in, I thought, oh, my God, it could be one of those afternoons. But what did you make of that goal in the opening few minutes for Wolves?
Yeah, it's interesting that we've already touched on that sort of 5-3-2 as well, because it's something straight away it rang in my head, and not to name drop, but I spoke about it with my best mate, Gary Neville, after hearing him speak about it on the podcast, on his Gary Neville podcast. He always said a 5-3-2. He said he hated playing in it and he loved playing against it as a fullback, because he said it almost, he said, neither one of the strikers is going to come out to you if you're playing in a back four. So the Gary Neville sort of right back, as Pedro Porro was in that back four. Neither of the strikers are going to come wide. And he said, and then they sometimes get a bit lost. And I watched João Gomes for the goal. Didn't get over there quick enough. And it was reminiscent of that. And it is a weakness of that formation. But largely, as we said, it looked pretty solid. It was a nice little turn from Kulusevski. I mean, we see that from Wolves players often enough. And we cause damage with little moves like that. Don't often see them against us. But it's, as goals to concede, it was sort of when we go, well, fair play, but also you've got five back there and Brennan Johnson managed to go in between. I think there are errors there. As you say, I don't think Gomez gets across quick enough. I think he was brilliant. And for me, Gomez starts every game, but in that situation, I don't think he was great. That was the main thing I took away from it, that it's a weakness in the formation. They exploited it once. And after that, they didn't really have a sniff. So it's one little weakness in the game. And yeah, that was about it. And quite happy from then on. But as you say, after 2 minutes, you go, oh dear. Literally, like, they've got their most vulnerable position all season, aren't they, Tottenham? Don't give them anything cheap. And we did, but yeah. Luckily, yeah, we were all right in the end.
Well, that was the thing. That was sort of narrative going into the game, wasn't it? That Tottenham were this week, you know, it always have surely got to get something or surely got to win. But football is never that straightforward. No. And Postecoglou's not a bad manager. He would have had them ready for this game from, I said it many times, I think, on Preview and other Spurs podcasts. On Tuesday morning, he would have had a pretty good idea of who would have been available for that game on Saturday. Mm. And, you know, he would have geared them up for it. But yeah, I think it's mad to almost be so picky when, you know, we've picked up a great result. But there were a couple of players. I think Brennan Johnson, from his perspective, I think it's a really clever run to get him behind. But I think the defensive shape there, I think defensively, Wolves will be very disappointed with how they conceded that goal, because it probably should have stopped. I think Totti, sort of like you mentioned earlier, I think Semedo obviously follows Brennan Johnson, but could he have been passed on to Dawson or whoever? So, but I think, you know, we ignore that really. Jordan, the rest of the game, really, I think Spurs only had one other shot on target throughout the rest of the game, and it was just tipped over the bar in the second half. But Wolves just always had their foot on the gas throughout the 90, but it was just a matter of, you know, probably what it felt like, when we were going to score or not, if we were going to score. But at the same time, it was almost at times a little bit like that Sheffield United game, where Wolves were just at times trying to walk the ball in the back of the net again, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's something we know, and it's something we'll probably talk about a lot, probably even in the games to come as well, coming to January. I still feel like we're missing that sort of striker, and I think there's a lot of teams that want one, and they're not cheap to come by or easy to come by. But we're just a little bit blunt when we go forward, and that's just the truth of it, really. We haven't got that killer instinct in front of the goal at times, and we do try and walk it in and probably overplay. But I think, you know, the performance was as good as I've seen, to be honest with you, and I still come away from that thinking, you know what, I feel like we certainly didn't deserve to lose the game. I'm not sure if we deserve to go on and win it, and that's just purely because I don't think we worked Vicario enough either. Yeah. But in terms of control of the game, tempo of the game, the team looking to, you know, push on the front foot and try and get goals and play for the win, it was all us, really. I think Spurs were quite content. And like I say, we weren't necessarily hurting them when it comes to that final third. I think Cunha had a chance that he passed over the bar in the second half, and we didn't really get behind them that much in terms of, well, working Vicario. So, you know, it's one of those things, but it was, like I say, it's such a good win and a good performance. And I know Gary O'Neill spoke very highly of it as well, post-match as well. But yeah, it's one of our better performances when it comes to controlling a football game.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, Finn, as well, was that Spurs high line. We saw it against Chelsea, and it was almost, I watched that game as a neutral and thought, what are Spurs doing? Because I think even with nine men, you could park, and Chelsea struggled until, you know, I mean, Jordan, it was typical timing as well for us, because we recorded that podcast right before that game, talking about Spurs, and then that result happened. But you know, playing on the halfway line with nine men, I thought, what is he doing? And then obviously he came out after Postecoglou saying, look, this is the way I want to play. So we almost knew what to expect from Spurs going into this match, regardless of the back four, because I think that was their biggest talking point. And the amount of space the likes of Semedo and so on were getting on that right-hand side. I think going back to what you were saying about that 5-3-2, Bellegarde was sitting a little bit more in field, and Semedo had acres and acres of space. And I don't think Semedo did particularly too bad. I think at times, you know, he brought the ball down quite well. He tried to bring other players into play. But I was just thinking, if Neto was on this pitch, he could have had a whale of a time. But one of the other things, and I think I almost got laughed out at half-time for suggesting it, Finn, I thought, if you could get the Matt Doherty of 2018, 2019 on this pitch with this amount of space, what damage could he do? But I mean, he came on at the end. He didn't do a huge amount, did he? But
He nearly did. There was the one, wasn't the one chance.
But down those sides, even Aitnori, I thought, had a great game. But there was a lot of space there, wasn't there, for those Wolves wing-backs especially to exploit?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the ball that you were screaming at in the Chelsea game, where it just felt like they just didn't know what they were doing. Yeah, it was like, just make a run, like, time it. It's so simple for them, and they eventually did it. So frustrating to watch. It wasn't as frustrating from a Wolves perspective. It wasn't as severe, like nine players all in a line. And I think we found that ball more, as you say, the sort of Kilman to Aitnori one, where you weren't exactly in on goal, but you'd sort of bypassed a certain area. And as I was criticising the, like, Gomez not getting wide for things, the 5-3-2, I don't want to bash it too much. I mean, we've seen probably the best years of our lives with Wolves in a 5-3-2 with him and Ezan Josa up there. So it certainly does have its merits. But I think in that sense, we nullified their midfield. And yeah, and we found the space out wide. Again, don't think we did enough with it. And I think if added time didn't go how it did, we'd probably be saying that, because there were opportunities there. And saying that, I think Pedro Parra is a great player. And Emerson, I know he was a bit of a joke last year, but I think he's pretty solid as well. So it's not an area they were necessarily weak. You maybe did want to attack that back line, as in the two centre-halves, a bit more. But clearly Gary O'Neill spotted something, and it all worked out just about in the end, yeah. Beat the buzzer.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of as it was approaching that sort of towards the end of the game, George, I think we would have been very disappointed that if we had lost out in that game, because Spurs just, other than, you know, like I said earlier, just didn't create a hell of a lot. But then it felt like we had, you know, so much of the ball. Well, not even so much of the ball. Spurs had more possession than us, but they were just sort of keeping it a lot in their own half. They weren't, basically, they didn't test us enough to sort of warrant them winning the game, really, in my opinion. But we just hadn't created those clear-cut opportunities. But, I mean, a little bit of magic. And I think this is the beauty now. And I know we've got players like Pablo Sarabia is a perfect example, where we know what he's capable of, but we've just not seen it enough in a Wolves shirt. Matt Doherty obviously came on, like we mentioned, Justin as well, who he's, in my opinion, I think it got far too much stick when we signed him in the summer, because I think in terms of an experienced and obviously backup, I think, to be fair, the backlash was probably people concerned that he was going to take Semedo's place in the lineup. But for as an experienced backup, I think he's a very good option to have in as well. But Wolves have now got this quality of player that they can bring off the bench, Jord. And Sarabia was one of those. And I think I read that he had 7 touches throughout the game. One of them was that brilliant touch. The second was that goal. And then obviously one was the assist, which we'll talk about as well. But I mean, talk me through that goal, Jordan, your emotion as Cunha whipped that ball in, because my word, what a finish that is.
It was unbelievable, wasn't it? And I hope people have kept the receipts about me saying that Sarabia is a good player on this podcast, and everyone's been bashing him for a long, long time. Just want to say that first of all. But no, I think, yeah. I mean, that touch was unbelievable, wasn't it? I was fortunate enough to be in a box for the game on Saturday, and it all happened just so quickly right in front of me. Like, I was like, bloody hell, we're going, oh, that's a goal, that is. But then all of a sudden, like, my Apple Watch is pinging just from people who are obviously watching it at home, and like, even like some of my Alvin mates going, you need to see the first touch is unbelievable. And I probably watched the goal back like every Wolves fan 20, 30 times comfortably.
Yeah.
And the first touch is just unbelievable. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, it sets it up so nicely for it. You just think you can just twat it, aren't you? Like, it's just perfect there, just to volley it. And it's just a great technique. It's a fantastic goal. And I'm so happy for him, really, because he's had a bit of flack, and, you know, he's not had a great time with it at Wolves, let's be honest with you. Certainly this season, he's been struggling. We know he had twins in the summer, and he's sort of been out of the team. And that quality's always been there. I think, you know, to play for, you know, Sporting Lisbon, PSG, all that, those sort of teams, you can't be a bad player. He was in the World Cup squad with Spain last, like, literally 12 months ago. Mm. Yeah, look, he's a great technical footballer, and I hope now it helps him kick on, because I think that goal, he doesn't play that pass for Lamina if he didn't score that goal, because it was such a... I don't think he'd have tried it. I really don't think he'd have tried that pass. Unbelievable. So happy for him.
Finn, dare I say, almost felt a little bit Messi-esque, maybe. You know, one of those. You know when players score goals in League Two. You know, if that was Messi, it'd be replayed everywhere. But yeah. You know what? You'd be seeing some serious replays of that. If I think he's getting a lot of credit, but man,
yeah,
the quality is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, on this podcast, I've been calling him Juan Mata for however long, and I thought that was a bit generous. But if we're going to Messi, then sure, let's step it up after his second goal in a shirt. But I think there's a lot of games where, say, when we play Spurs, when we play Man City, when we play Man United, where sometimes you go, oh, they've just got that added quality that we don't have. And we create a chance in that game. As you say, we've had a player that's whacked in 20 goals in Lisbon, PSG. He's got that quality. And I think those sorts of games, I mean, we brought him on. Did he bring him on in Sheffield United? I don't think. But Sheffield United away, for example, it's not a Sarabia game. It's a similar vibe to Trincao. So you go Crystal Palace away, don't bring Sarabia on. And I think he started that game, didn't he? He was an anonymous. I think he's going to suit certain games this season. And Tottenham, in those games where they're maybe not going to be as physical. It's more of a technical game. And he's got that in abundance, that touch, my word, as we were saying. Yeah, it's just technicality personified, unbelievable. And they seem to all really, really like him, don't they, Sarabia? Despite him not getting much of a kick. Saying that, I'm just thinking now he scored a goal away at Fulham, didn't he? But as away games go, I think Fulham's a pretty nice one, isn't it? Well, yeah. You're not going to get roughed up much at Fulham. But yeah, as in, like, I like to see everyone come. It wasn't as if it was like, I don't know, like, oh, go and let him celebrate that one. Everyone jumps on, everyone's happy for him. He's in that leadership group, isn't he? Highest paid player. One of the oldest in the squad now as well, and seems like a really nice guy by all accounts I've heard as well. So really good moment for him. I think they're going to come more in games like that, as I said. But yeah, hopefully that now spurs him on. And as you say, it spurred him on 6 minutes later to do something decent as well.
Yeah, I think the beauty is, like I said earlier, like having that quality. And Sarabia, I don't think the transfer itself will ever get the recognition like the Moutinho one did, for argument's sake. But again, it's the same sort of fee. It was about £5 million that we signed Sarabia for, which is, you know, in this day and age, an unbelievable piece of business. And I know he's struggled so far, and obviously we hope he continues. He still needs to do much more in a Wolves shirt. But if you can still get a couple more of those moments from him, or a couple of more times where he can come on and change a game for the better for you, you know, you're 100% getting your money's worth. And I think so far so good in terms of morale. From the outside, it looks like players are happy and Gary O'Neill is getting that sort of reaction from players. But if he can still keep these players happy, like your Sashas, like your Sarabias, like your Tommy Doyles, and say, look, you might start on the bench, but you can come on and make the difference. And we've seen that now from, I mean, we put a stat out last week in regards to substitutes, the percentage of goals that Wolves have scored that were from substitutes. And obviously that's another one on Saturday to add to that as well. But then, Jordan, I mentioned Tommy Doyle then. I think the referee started to lose the control a little bit towards the end of the game where the fouls kept coming in and out. Finally, Wolves got one, you know, on their own. Spurs trying to stand on the ball, and Tommy Doyle just takes that quick free kick out wide to Sarabia. And like you said, possibly wouldn't have had the confidence to play that ball, you know, if he hadn't have scored his goal. And it's one head. It's almost just the accuracy. It's just the perfect ball. And Lamina popping up for another goal in consecutive home games. And I couldn't believe it at that point. Like I said, Jordan, I would have taken a point, I think, when Sarabia scored. But to go on to take all 3 points, absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, it was class. Such a great goal. I thought, again, we'll probably talk about it, I thought Lamina was the best player on the pitch by country mile as well, by the way. On Saturday, he was so good, up and down, box to box. He was everywhere and everywhere. And yeah, look, I think you underestimate, or people are underestimating, the finish by Lamina as well. It's like he's took it with his right foot coming across his body. Naturally, you'd say you should probably take it with your left foot open, like let the ball come across your body with it with your left foot. It's just a great goal. Such a good goal. And I mean, Molyneux, I've not heard a sound like that for since probably. It's going back to Man United quarter final when Jota scored. It was like electric, wasn't it? The sound when the goal went in. So yeah, again, just class, just so good, and deserve all the plaudits they possibly can. We were all hugging Hwang Hee-chan's family when the goal went in, which was quite
funny. Really?
yeah, literally. So yeah, he had a box full, and when the second goal went in, yeah, we probably ended up in their box, to be fair. But that is it was unbelievable. It was class. So good.
To be fair, I mean, we talk about that as well. I mean, obviously Hwang played, and obviously against Son, and the amount of, I mean, Finn, you showed the amount of sort of from the Asian audience, the South Korean fans that were out there, and I saw quite a few with like Wolves passes on, you know, so they got there early, and you know they've got these like mini kiosks now. Like I don't know if they're outside every stand, but outside the South, and they've got a mini kiosks where you can buy shirts and stuff without having to actually go to the club shop. Mate, there was a South Korean guy there, must have had 400 quid's worth of Wolves merch, like about to buy it. It was absolutely, like the pile of shirts was absolutely mad. But obviously great that, you know, for this sort of new type of fan to come in. I know some people don't like it, but I think my brother said the temporary stand had a lot of South Korean fans in there. I'm sure there would have been obviously in corporate Finn. I'm not sure if there were many in there as well. But I mean, you spotted it, Finn, and I suppose for you is that sort of having that Jimenez vibe a few years ago. It's nice to see this happen as well.
Yeah, one of my sister's friends was in the temporary stand, and she said a lot of them, because they were there, they've got Hwang and Son on the same pitch. They said every goal they cheered for, so even the Tottenham goal, a lot, and then they sort of quickly realised, oh, okay, maybe not. It's not a neutral end, really. Yeah, a lot jumped up for that one. And neither of them, they were both quite quiet, weren't they, in the game, both the South Korean boys. But yeah, we got there pretty early, and the club shop was, you'd say 90% South Korean people. It's crazy. I think they printed 1,000 Hwang Hee-chan shirts in preparation for the Korean tour. So I think that will have done it. Yeah, it will have done a good job to have shifted a few of those. But yeah, it's crazy. I don't know whether you saw on the North Bank side as well, after the game, there was a queue so long in it for the Megastore afterwards. I've got a good video as well. There was a guy that had a big Wolves flag on, and he'd written the Wolves guy 11. One of the Koreans had come over and had that on the back of his stuff. So yeah, it was a good vibe. I think it's something that's I think if you ask Tottenham fans now, they go, because there's always, when you go to Tottenham away, there's a lot of South Korean people in attendance. For now, it's sort of a novelty with Wolves. And I think we lose a few games and then people will start blaming that. We've lost the atmosphere because there's tourists in the stadium. But at the moment, I think it's brilliant. And as you say, yeah, it was great when the Mexicans had come over. When we're saying we might need a striker, I think the new Jimenez at Feyenoord would be lovely to resurrect my YouTube channel. But yeah, for now, I think the South Korean audience is one that's growing. And yeah, it's great to see. And I think with Hwang, I think there was a point where we were all, well, like when that Leeds bid came in, a lot of us would go, oh, well, for that money, and Wolves have persevered. And yeah, it's bearing fruit on the pitch, off the pitch. It's brilliant all round.
Yeah, I don't think I've mentioned it on the podcast. The guy, he might listen to the podcast, to be fair, because I've got a lot of people that know him mutually. Guy in front of me has got a blue shirt, and it says the Korean guy on the back. And people love it. People, it gets at least 4 or 5 people comment on it every game, to be fair. But no, I mean, yeah, like you said, both the South Korean players did obviously had quiet games as well. But I don't, it must have been on all bookies. Son to have 1+ shot on target was at 2-1. Because I mentioned it on the bookmakers I use, and loads of people did. And I didn't put a lot of money on it, but it didn't come in because he didn't have a shot on target, which is absolutely mad when you think about it, that we kept him quiet so much, Finn.
Just on that as well, just if we can pivot to Dawson, Haaland and Son, he's pretty much had a one-on-one marking job in both those big wins for us. Kept him. I mean, there's a bit where he sort of clawed at his face.
Feisty moments.
Yeah, wow. At that age as well, to be given that job, you go, oh, come on, Gary, Haaland. So I think there'll be a few more to come as well if this sort of system's working. But yeah, I think a lot of plaudits have got to go to him for those individual jobs that he's done.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the, what was I saying? In terms of individual performances, I mean, we've quickly touched on a few. George, we'll start off with Bellegarde because he was the one, obviously, we spoke about coming in. I don't know. I think the sort of connection between him and Semedo lacked a little bit, possibly. And I mentioned on the review that obviously he's not played a lot from that right hand side, and I still felt it took Neto a couple of weeks to get used to. I mean, you remember the opening few games, we were moaning about which side he was going to play on, but then in games like Man City and so on, the passes they were finding to each other were fantastic. Do you think it's just a matter of time? We need more time in the system, because I just felt that the sort of, like I was saying, the connection between him and Semedo weren't on the same wavelength at times throughout the game.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think that it doesn't help that he was playing infield and not naturally, you know, it wasn't a natural sort of 3-4-3 formation. He was doing a lot of defensive duty coming inside and matched up with the Spurs midfield three a lot of the time. So it didn't allow them to link up and connect how normally Semedo and Neto would be pre-injury. I think to caveat that as well, I think that's his third start in a Wolves shirt, isn't it? When you think about it,
yeah,
I think he started Liverpool, Luton, he got sent off early, and then that was his third start. So still extremely fresh into the league. And again, I'm not saying, you know, I thought he played okay. I just don't think, you know, there's a lot of clamours that he was unbelievable. I don't think he was unbelievable on the weekend. I think he's looked better in certainly that Liverpool game. He looked electric. But yeah, look, it'll come. You can definitely tell he's a good footballer, technically very good. And yeah, it'll come. It's just about getting, like say, used to systems and used to players, and start getting that sort of little bit of telepathicness, I guess, if that's even a word, when it comes to passing and the moving. Yeah, there we go with that. So it'll come in time for sure, 100%.
Finn, do you think him beating the first man on the corner will come as well, or?
Yeah. Well, neither of them were any good, were they?
Aitnori was a great year.
No, because I like Aitnori on corners. But when was that? Like 2021 sort of era when he was whipping a few in, and he was one I was looking at for my FPL. I thought, with Neto out, he's on corners, he's getting forward. But yeah, neither of them, I don't think, will be going in very soon for set piece delivery. I think if Tommy Doyle was on the pitch, I think or even when he was sat on the bench, he'd have just been just itching to get on. Poor delivery. And as you say, I think that Liverpool game for Bellegarde, that one where the ball came out down from space and he just cushioned it down on his chest. I haven't heard Molyneux make a noise like it. Everyone was it was a different noise to the goal. But yeah, it was a great start, then a bit of a false start, wasn't it, with that red card and then the injury. And yeah, it'll come. There's a quality footballer there. And I know people maybe overrating at the moment, but you see those sort of stat comparisons with Nunes so far. He's that similar profile of player, and for the amount of money we made in that transaction for the two, it's not a major downgrade at the moment. So I think it'll come, and seems like a good guy as well. As with the recruitment, there's sort of been a focus on that, hasn't there? Seems like a good guy as well. So
I think there was one moment, it would have been in the second half, he was shooting North Bank end where he was bearing down on goal. I think he had Cunha to the left in a bit of space, and there was someone else to the right, and he decided to go on goal on his own. And I think he skied it in the end, and Cunha wasn't happy about that. But I think, will it be interesting? I think I'd be surprised if Neto is fully fit for the Fulham game. So you would expect that Bellegarde will probably keep his place for that match, but we'll wait and see anyway.
Do you think we've ever had a smooth, connected right side? because I remember when we had Adama and Semedo and everyone was putting out, oh, quickest like right side on FIFA. I can't remember. I think Neto and Semedo was the closest we've had in recent times. I don't think, you know, like an understanding, we've gone, oh, they're not quite clicking, they're not quite clicking. When do you think the last time was that we've had a right side where you go, oh, them two are working well? James Henry? How far back did you go?
I'd probably go as far back as Foley and Kightley.
I think Doc did a really good job of trying to predict him. That's probably,
but that's what that's what I mean. Like Neto would, and maybe it's just Bellegarde's style of play. Neto, you know, if you played the ball down the wing, you get it and beat his man. Whereas Bellegarde just kept coming inside a few times, and Semedo was like almost wanting to play that ball, but knows that Bellegarde probably wouldn't have been sort of on the of the same wavelength, but that'll come. I think that will come with time together on the training pitch and obviously gaining time overall as well. Switching over to the opposite side, Jord, eight Nori, who again, ignoring his corners, which we've already mentioned, but I thought, mate, every week he just seems to be getting better and better at the moment. And he had one or two moments where he actually got in behind. And I think, again, on another, if he can start adding goals from the wing back areas, that it's going to be a major, major bonus. But how mad is it that Lopetegui was looking to maybe move him on in the summer?
Yeah, it's nuts, really. Aaron Creswell won't be doing what Aitnery's doing anyway, for all that. Not at 34 years old, anyway. But no, look, he's clearly a very talented lad, isn't he? And I think, you know, he seems to be getting better defensively. He seems to be getting fitter. I always had the bit of a problem with him last season, especially. He never seems to complete 90 minutes. He always seemed to come off it. Yep. He'd cramp up one knee, and he just didn't really ever seem to get, could get a full game out of him, which is why, you know, Hugo Breno shared a lot of the roles and responsibilities with him last year. And that might be why Lopetegui wasn't all for him, because he just didn't seem to be at the level fitness-wise. But yeah, he's coming on leap and bounds at the minute. I'll be honest with you, the first 10 minutes was a little bit shaky. I thought, for the goal especially, he gave Kulusevski a little bit too much respect, a little bit time, too much time for me. And then he sort of started standing off him a couple of yards, and I thought, no, you need to get tighter to him. But then he sort of worked that out pretty quickly, and then he I thought he defended Kulusevski really, really well then. But that first 10, 15 minutes was a little bit shaky. But yeah, he was unbelievable. I mean, some of the skills were class, like the Zidane trick and the Zidane flick, and there's a nutmeg when they're in there. It's just, yeah, he's box office, but for someone with his talent and ability, he should get more attacking returns, and I'm sure that will come. But that is the only downside with him at the moment. And I don't want to be too critical, because it sounds like it's almost like that Semedo thing where he didn't do enough. But again, I think they both could add more offensively, and when they do, they'll be, you know, taken to the next level, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's ball manipulation almost, and the way he moves the ball around is just phenomenal. And I think, you know, we saw it against Newcastle where I think he 360 rouletted one player and then put it through the next player's legs, and then he did the same again, you know, on Saturday. And it's just, when you've got a player that's just he's still improving, he's still so young as well, and when you've got a player that can produce that sort of entertainment, but then at the same time keep, I know you mentioned obviously the thing with Kulusevski there, but he tends to have really good games against the tough wingers. You know, defensively, he's actually really, really good as well. So, like I said, if he can add more, a bonus. And one player, Finn, that he's adding more is Mario Lemina, who George already mentioned that he's probably the best player on the pitch. I would agree. And I could even say he's probably one of Wolves' most important players at the moment. I mean, another phenomenal game for him. And it was obviously great for him to add another goal to his Wolves tally.
Yeah, and before the last 2 weeks, even maybe before that Newcastle goal, you would have said zero attacking threat. He's great defensively, but now he's adding that. I know the one was a corner, so you could still have said that. But yeah, I didn't know he had that in him. I know it trickled into the corner, but I think I had a similar one at the thingy game, didn't I? The charity game, and even closer in it and messed that exact type of shot up. So no criticism. Yeah, if he can add that as well, you've got a complete midfielder for, I think, 6 months before we could have gotten for 1 or 2 million, as we said, that Liam Keane said, but we paid still a relatively cheap fee for a Premier League midfielder. I know he's not getting any younger, but he's still got years in the tank. He's aggressive. He can play as well. So brilliant signing all round. And it's another one, I'm sorry to keep saying it, but there was a lot of reports that he maybe wasn't the best character in the past, but he seems to have really matured. I think that's the perk of getting him in at this age, that he's maybe realised that, oh, let me get my head down here and I'm a really good footballer. And yeah, really bearing fruit. He was superb. He was everywhere. And I think did he get booked? I don't think he did get booked, is he? So he'll live to fight another day because he's still technically on that four yellow card. that four yellow cards at the moment. But yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that is one player that did get booked, which we'll talk about in a minute as well. Yeah, but Dawson was not Dawson. Sorry, that's sort of ruined what I was going to say. But Lamina, just even on the ball. You know when you got a defensive midfielder sometimes, and they're just like a little bit of a lump. Like they'll do the dirty work, they'll win the ball and so on, and move it on. But in terms of his ability on the ball, it's so good. The way that he was shifting past players, his dribbling ability is really underrated as well, I think. And like, I mean, can't get too ahead of ourselves. He's only scored twice, but if we can start, you know, obviously we all want a striker, but if we can start adding goals as well from the defensive area or from the midfield area, obviously it's going to help us and obviously go a long, long way as well. But a phenomenal win for Wolves, a huge 3 points, another 3 points away from that drop zone. And there you say, you know, much closer to sort of the top half of the table and even those European spots. So who knows, a good couple of weeks again for Wolves and happen. We'll very quickly touch on the Fulham game. It is still a little while away. Obviously, we've got the international break now. Finn, they lost out 3-1 yesterday to Villa.
Who scored, in terms of
the goat, mate? The old goat. in terms of lineup, I mean, assume Neto is not 100%. Are you starting the same lineup? Other than Mr. Craig Dawson, who I alluded to earlier, is actually suspended.
Yeah, I think so. There's maybe a little more there. One, that because Raul hasn't been starting, so I can say this when Raul isn't on the pitch, just to caveat, and maybe generously giving him that. But they're not looking too threatening going forward. So with Dawson out, it maybe does tempt you more towards the four, but we've looked brilliant in that five, and every week it happens. I mean, I wish we made that video because I look like a bloody genius because we're literally playing that exact system with the Totti 8 Norrie.
We've got the podcast receipts, mate, don't worry.
Yeah, well, only brief mentions. I wanted to go deep, but I think there is a case there. If there is a game to bring Bueno in, as you say, they've got Carlos Vinicius. I think Muniz is out for a while now, and then Raul as well. It's not the most potent attack in the league. So if it's one, you do have to bring him in that back three. It's not the end of the world. But I'm 50-50 really on whether I'd add another player in there, because you could also do a right. Well, Sarabia's just done that. Fulham away. It was the scene of the crime last time. Could you sort of substitute that third defender, add a number 10, and we're away? So yeah, really 50-50. I'm going to sit on the fence on that one. I'll be happy either way, but maybe talking myself into that sort of maybe Sarabia one. I don't know.
Yeah, George, what do you think? Like I said, Dawson will be out. So do you go and switch to a four at the back and push an extra attacking player on, or do you stick with the five and bring Santi Bueno in?
I just think you stick with what's winning this game at the moment. I just think you bring Santi Bueno in. I think there's a reason why we brought him to the football club. He was highly thought of at Girona. Girona are top of La Liga, by the way. He can't get a kick for us, which is mad.
it must be
gutted. No, look, I think Ipswich was shaky, but I mean, a lot of them were, let's be honest with you. It wasn't exactly our finest hour. Look, bring him in and give him a game. I think I wouldn't want to change it too much. We tried to play, we almost felt like a bit of a back four against Sheffield United with Aitnery pushing a little bit higher. And it just, Totti's not a left back, really. He's a makeshift left back, put it like that. So I think you lose a little bit by playing him there. So I'll just stick with what's winning us games at the moment. We've lost one game in six, and we should have lost that game. I was going to Craven Cottage. It's a difficult place to go. The good thing for us is João Palhinha's obviously suspended for those guys as well. He's their best player by a long, long way. So yeah, look, we can go there and should hopefully get a positive result. I mean, I still don't think a point's the worst result coming away from home there, but they're a very beatable team at the moment, and the confidence we've got at the moment will cause them problems for sure.
Yeah, I agree. One loss is seven, actually, George. Makes it sound even better, to be fair.
Let's go
1-7.
Happy days.
Well, I mean, this is a good chance. I mean, very quickly getting our fixtures up. I think, I know we play Arsenal at the start of, is it Burnley after that?
Fulham. I'm just thinking Burnley's at home. On the FPL.
Oh, no, so it is. It's Fulham and then Arsenal away. It's Burnley after that, yeah. I mean, look, in the next four, lads, Fulham, then Arsenal is obviously a tough one, but then Burnley at home and Forest at home. genuinely, we could be. I know it's hard football.
Say it, Dave. Get your passports.
We could be in a nice position. I mean, if we continue the form, let's say you get 9 points, which it's still a bit of a stretch, but if you can get 9 points from those games, Wolves will be in a really, really nice position going into that sort of busy Christmas schedule. I think if we're still in and around mid-table by Christmas, I think it'd be a really, really nice position to be in, considering how doom and gloom and so on it was sort of at the start of the season, which I'm sure some of the questions we'll talk about anyway. Anything else to add, lads, before we move on to the questions?
I'm just on one thing, just with the Totti left-back thing. Do you not think, and I think this could work for Fulham as well, when we went to that back four against Tottenham, I thought every time Kulusevski, I know Aitnori did well as well, but every time Kulusevski went near Totti, he did not want to know whatsoever. And I think Totti against that sort of winger, maybe not against someone that's a little bit quicker, but when Totti can just, he can outmatch and pace, power. And I think you've got, is it Harry Wilson on the right for Fulham?
Probably will be Harry Wilson, yeah.
It's going to be that same sort of profile. I know he can hit a ball, but if you've got Totti, I think that could be a decent match. If you do need to shift to that four during the game, I don't think I'd be too worried about that, because he did well against Kulusevski.
So I can't think if it was on Twitter or on YouTube. Have you ever seen Totti Gomez have a bad game for Wolves?
I've seen him have a shaky...
Yeah.
Shaky moments in it. But
he got sent off against Brentford, but I don't think he was particularly bad. It was a bit of a...
No, they got overturned, didn't it?
Yeah.
He had a bad 45 minutes away at Forest last year in the Carabao Cup as well, when he played centre
of
the...
No, okay, both cup games, even at Ipswich, he wasn't great.
Have you ever seen a league game? Yeah.
I think in our league, in the league, his record is like really good. Like in terms of like the loss percentage is quite low. Like he's actually got a really, really good record. So,
as I say, I believed in him, Football Manager. He was my grasshopper's boy.
Anyway, let's move on to some questions.
I was going to say, Dave, I've got something to say. I'm sorry, but the internet at the moment is whatever the storm's called at the moment is causing havoc for me.
It's all right.
But I wanted to highlight the Gary O'Neill stuff that was released by TNT Sports after the game in the changing rooms, and just sort of like how good I thought it was, how refreshing I thought it was to hear, and sort of how honest it is as a manager to say that sort of stuff, and you can tell like all the players in the changing room have sort of focused on him, that you can tell they're with him, that they're listening to what he's saying. And I think, it goes a lot to say, like, Gary O'Neill and Sean Derry in particular, they had fantastic football careers when it comes to professionals in the English game, represented the country youth level wise, but also were cogs in teams which had special players, which sort of, I think, is what Gary O'Neill was alluding to. Like, Gary O'Neill through his career, QPR, he had people like Tarat, Revel, Morrison, Nico Cranchar, Portsmouth as well. He had like Cranchar again, your Defoes, your Crouches, all these sort of talented footballers where he was just sort of a piece in that wheel. Same with Sean Derry. I think they're sort of instilling that honest, hardworking and being very relatable to the players. And it's a breath of fresh air for me. And I think, there's a lot of... things that were said about Gary O'Neill's appointment. It wasn't the most sort of inspiring appointment. We all know that. But I think week on week, he's gaining so much credit and kudos with Wolves fans and how he's coming across. And look, he got dealt quite a bad hand, I think, with what the situation he's coming to. And, I just think if we continue to go in the trajectory we are and keep backing him, we might have a gem on our hands out of nowhere, basically. So I just wanted to highlight that as well. That he's very relatable with what he was saying.
No, I fully agree. I think it's great that we're getting that sort of stuff as well. And I mean, the TNT Sport thing, they had the first time a player had, what's it even called now? The player's POV. Yeah. So who was it for Wolves? Do we know?
Kilman and Brennan Johnson. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah. And then obviously that content at the end as well, which I think Wolves shared as well. I mean, it shows that the sort of togetherness, and I think we mentioned it a couple of times in terms of the club obviously want to bring us closer to the team and the players and the staff, because I think we lost that connection slightly, especially after Nuno left. I mean, Fosun have always been quite private in regards to that, but Nuno had got that togetherness together with the fans, whereas it sort of faded away with Bruno Lage, and I think that was just the type of manager and character he was that I think he wanted to like the fans, and I think he showed that sometimes as well. I wanted to get the fans on board, but I think the style of football wasn't great. Lopetegui started off well, but then turned into a bit of a moaner, didn't he? So it's fantastic to have someone that we can almost relate to a little bit more as well. Like you said, Jordy, it's fantastic to see. I mean, but if we're going to move on to the questions, because to be fair, one from Ad Sid away here says he's seen a lot of people starting to admit that they were wrong about Gary O'Neill and the appointment after the positive start we've had to the season. Finn, should we be also aiming our apologies towards the board, or have they just got lucky with the Hobbs's judgment of Gary O'Neill and then obviously going on to sell Neves and Nunes for 100 million?
Yeah, while the sun is shining, you can look and you can see City fans saying, oh, we've been robbed with Nunes. Neves is homesick, if you believe that one as well. So, I think it's all looking good at the moment. And I'd probably be guilty of going too far the other way. Because was it the one after Ipswich? I was pretty, and I still stand by, I didn't really like Gary O'Neill's comments after the Ipswich game, where he was sort of saying, that where he inferred we were in a relegation battle and we've lost a lot of players. I didn't like things like that. And at the time, I still don't think was right. But my God, has he turned it around since then? I think the main criticisms were what, subs? And maybe those comments, maybe not from everyone saying that, but that's massively turned around. As you say, now we've had the highest percentage of goal scorers from subs. So that's firmly shut that one up. And I think there is an element of getting lucky, because a lot of us at the time would have gone, we were saying, oh, Gary O'Neill, we've had this manager that's won European Cups and now it's someone's caretaker. And it's one of those where you go, when they say, oh, the harder, the more I practice, the luckier I get. I think if they've seen a gem there, like Matt Hobbs has seen a gem that we hadn't seen, and the presentation sounded like it blew him away, and if that's now what we're seeing on the pitch, I don't think there is an element of saying, well, maybe it was now foresight. And I think I'm convincing myself it was that at the moment, because everything's looking great, and obviously a few losses in a row and we're back to all that again. But I think now, even this time saying that, I think he's bought a few losses in a row. He's bought five or six in a row, I reckon. And I think everything that's come through, the way he's speaking, as you say, the stuff in the dressing room and everything, it seems like a really tight-knit bunch. I think, yeah, he's bought a lot. Even the Monday Night Football appearance, he's bought
for sure
a lot of patience now. So, yeah, brilliant all round. And it's element of luck, but no, I'd like to think that we knew what we were doing.
Jordan, I mean, if your internet holds up, I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts on that as well, because I think Wolves have almost created that sort of environment now. I think in terms of the staff as well, the people that he's got around him, just...
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't know a huge amount about them, but just seems like he's got a good core of staff there as well. And obviously Fosun were getting a lot of stick. I think they were honest in the summer, and unfortunately honesty isn't always the way, and football fans, when you're spending a lot of money to go and watch your football team, honesty is and the truth sometimes isn't what you want to hear, but they were honest with us. Matt Hobbs was honest with us, and they've brought this guy in. Obviously Gary O'Neill, very little experience, but he's doing a good job, and I think you can see almost, I've seen a change in him as a coach in just sort of 10, 11 weeks, where he's almost, you can see what he's changed. You can see what he's learned in regards to his players, in regards to his in-game management. And I think it's right. A lot of people are going back on what they said. And I don't know how, if we were overly negative on it, on this appointment, were we? Because I think we all said at the time, look, yes, he might not be the number one choice, but regardless, we're Wolves fans and we've got to back him.
Yeah, I think the change in O'Neill is sort of the confidence that he's got in himself now, with a few results going his way, and you know, players are buying in and understanding and buying into his tactics. I think Matt Hobbs obviously spoke really, really well about the appointment of Gary O'Neill. Even at the time, he was very sort of staunch on why he appointed him. What, this is the way we want to go. We want to go into data-driven results. Gary O'Neill's the man for that. And sort of that's the decision he was going for. And so far, it's looking like a very sort of frugal appointment and looking a very astute appointment. When it comes to Fosun, I mean, I'm still not convinced in terms of they were telling us the whole truth in the summer, because of just simple football accounting, FFP. They were trying to, like, they kept throwing that line. It kept feeling like it was getting regurgitated by local media. We've got FFP problems. Like, looking at the books and just what was out there in the public domain, it just felt like, to me, they just didn't want to put any more money into the club. And the reason is there's a massive world economic recession. It's harder to get money out of China. We understand that, but they're sort of hiding behind FFP, it felt like to me. So they still haven't got off it from me when it comes to, you know, saying you know, I don't want to say they've looked out. I don't think they've looked out. I think Matt Hobbs has made a very astute appointment, but I think Fosen have got away with it a little bit because it could have gone tits up after everything that happened with Lopetegui in the summer. But you know, I'd rather be lucky than good as well at the same time. So if they've got lucky, great. You know, so, but yeah, it's it'll be interesting. Like I say, it'll be good to know what we're saying about all this in like 6 months' time. Like you say, hopefully we are still where we are in the league and it's going well. But there's no doubt we'll probably come under pressure at some point where we might go on a run of games where we don't win in five or six, and it'll be interesting then to see sort of fans' opinion and the club's opinion at that stage really.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, we can continue this good form. But I think as Wolves fans, you're always sort of semi cautious of it. You know, it's still very early days. I mean, there was a video at me from that I did for Sky at the start of the season saying that we'll be sound. You know, people want to talk about relegation. I did repost that yesterday saying I know it's early days, but cause I got a lot of stick for that as well. But no, it's all good at the moment. The good mood, good atmosphere, and winning home games and scoring goals at home as well, which I think it took us until February to get the amount of goals that we're on so far. And I understand, obviously, there's that little World Cup break. But in terms of getting individuals to score goals and quality chances, it's improving, which is obviously great to see. We've got a question from Dan here, which is quite a cool one. If you could take a realistic striker from another Premier League club in the January window, who would it be? So Dan's gone with Dominic Solanke. I believe he runs the channels well. Good loan striker, brings players into the game, bit of flair. Obviously, he's not mentioned that, but Gary O'Neill would have managed him as well. I still think he would cost you a fair little bit of money, Dom Solanke. But Finn, you got anyone that sticks out to you? Maybe someone like Erling Haaland or no, realistic striker?
Raul Jimenez. Trying to think, because even Solanke, you go, would you go Bournemouth to Wolves? And I know that's quite a depressing statement, and it certainly would have been about 20 years ago, but I've never been that impressed with him. And I think his goals at the weekend, they said that's now leveled his best ever Premier League season with six. Those two. But it did feel like last season with O'Neill that he was smashing them in, didn't it? And when they were that, I remember he got a few at Tottenham away and it felt like he scored way more than six. So yeah, that sort of surprised me when he's only got the six last season. So I'm trying to think who's down that end. Like, because you're not going to be taking from above, are you? You're not going to go Ollie Watkins. So you've got... Who's down there? Is there none of the relegation candidates? There's no one there jumping out to me. I mean, Cameron Archer took his goal well against us, but
would you say I don't think he'd be a starter. Someone like Carlton Morris.
I'd love it for the name. I could get it on the back of my shirt. but no,
next to George Fatty shirt, apparently, according to Matt.
I'm trying to think who else is down there. You got, or even I don't know. Could you? No, I was going to say something silly. I was going to be like, oh, João Pedro's not starting for Brighton. No. But I'm trying to think of like a bench player, maybe that sort of European level. I can't really think of many. Antonio's not. I mean, he didn't start for West Ham at the weekend. Might
that's
be out
of favour.
I know we've always flirted with him. But if you're looking for clinical, I don't think you're going to find it there. I think Wolves, you're not going to find bargains in the Premier League, are you really? And that's what we've been going for. So if I was going to point us in any direction, it would be the Mexican striker with over a 1-2. Yeah, I mean, mate, he's on fire. And it turns out he was born in Argentina, but it represents Mexico. But yeah, he's like 28 goals in 40-something games. So get him in.
Bagsman. George, I mean, I think Finn's right. In the Premier League, it was a pretty cool question by Dan, but I think in terms of the Premier League, it's very hard to get value for money, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, everyone wants a 20-goal-a-season man, don't they? And they're just not very cheap. And if you got one, you're not going to let him go. I mean, like, I wouldn't, you know, to answer that question, I quite like Cameron Archer, to be honest with you. I know Villa, they've got Villa links, and, you know, he's only just gone to Sheffield United, but I think he could be a good footballer moving forward, but he's not someone that I'm desperate for us to go and get. Someone I've always liked, and is starting to play a little bit more now, more so because of the ban, is Johan Wisser from Brentford. I don't know why. I just quite like him as a footballer. But I think he's going to be playing and they're not going to look to sell him, are they? So it's quite a difficult, like you say, it's a difficult question. But yeah, and Solanke's the obvious one.
What about Brozier if Chelsea get a striker in January? I'm just looking at the table now because I know they'd probably get a loan one. Because they said they want one in January, don't they? Which would bring Nicholas Jackson down to second. And then Brozier sort of would then be the third. It'd probably be a loan. I don't think you'd be able to get him. But an option. Yeah, I can't. There's no one really jumping out at me looking at the table.
That's not a bad shout to it. Also, we did, I was meant to mention earlier, obviously just mentioned Matt there. I do wonder, and Finn, you'll probably have to answer this. I wouldn't, Matt, if he was there, because Matt's still recovering at the moment, guarantee you he would have missed both goals if he was at the ground.
Oh, he left.
Yeah. You and Mr. EAB Skills did miss both goals.
Yeah, you and left a bit early, missed both goals as well. unless you're like 2 or 3 nil down at that point, I think when the game's so close as well, I don't think you can afford to, man. I really don't think you can. So, yeah, you'll probably have a moan at me for mentioning that. But, oh, I lost one here. This is an interesting one. I'm a bit new to football, but the idea that a team should match the identity of the fans and the city is an interesting concept. Have you felt that way about Wolves in the past? And what team do you think most embodied Wolverhampton historically? Is that typical throughout the Premier League? So I wouldn't say it's typical throughout the Premier League, because you have cities that have got, and teams, you know, Manchester, for argument's sake, you know, with Manchester City, Manchester United, spend loads and loads and loads of money. I don't know. It's quite an interesting question, that is. I don't think it's common practice, but in terms of Wolves,
it's topical now. I think with the underdog, I think the underdog thing suits us really well, and I think that's come back this season. I think the home atmosphere is way better when it's that vibe, and I think that's coming back. You had the referee decisions, the FFP stuff. Everything. I think that sort of culminated in an atmosphere that's bubbling now. So something like that for Wolves personally. You could even say maybe. You go, Wolverhampton with a sort of Mick McCarthy team, weren't you, with the Jarvis and Keightley and something like that. That's what you instantly go to.
I would have said the McCarthy, definitely the McCarthy era for sure, 100%. But McCarthy's first season where he didn't have a pot to piss in. We got people like Jamal Johnson, Rowan Ricketts, we had Darren Potter, I think we were one of the favourites to go down, and we ended up getting in the playoffs, and we lost to Albion in the semi-final over two legs. They were a very good West Bromwich team at that point. They'd just been relegated from the Premier League. That, you are right, Finn, it's that anything with Wolves, it's underdog, backs against the wall. That's us, and there is elements of that at the moment, especially with sort of the horrific refereeing decisions we've been on the back of this year, for sure.
It's nice, obviously, not to talk about referee. We not mentioned, and I should have probably asked that. I think it was Tim Robinson, the referee. I mean, I'll ask it now way later than I should have done. But Finn, referee rating for Saturday? I still don't think he was great, by the way. I don't think he was fantastic.
No, and there wasn't a major, I can't even think of really a penalty shout either way or something like that for him to really get judged on. A few annoying ones. It was more the linesman kept falling for those ones, you know, where they're trying to shield the ball out for a goal kick and they fall over. But that's going to happen every game, and they still annoy me, and I know they shouldn't, because they're always going to happen. But I think of our recent standard, it's high up there, but I think corruptors, whatever, came out at least 3 or 4 times. So say it came out 4 times, I'll knock a point off every time. I'll give him a 6.
Yeah, I was probably going to say 6 or 7 to maybe. I had a delivery driver ask me about that chant as well. He goes, what were Wolves fans thinking about the Premier League towards the end of the game? So, Jordan, what do you reckon?
I'll give him a 5. I don't think he had a good game. I thought he's been better than what we've had recently, but he's still, there's a few decisions where he's just listening to the shout, and there was a spell, I think it was in the first half. We were attacking, and then I can't remember who fell over. I think it might have been Cunha. About 20 seconds later, a Tottenham player went down. I think it might have been Brennan Johnson.
He gave
the free kick. Very similar thing. And yeah, look, I can't nitpick. There wasn't anything like I thought he did extremely well or didn't do extremely badly or poorly, but I feel like he gave them a few cheap free kicks, if I'm honest with you.
Well, you had Brennan Johnson stayed down right at the end of the game, which meant the referee had to give 7 added minutes. So in the end, it sort of worked. It worked out. I would give him, I think, a 6. Maybe a 7 if, you know. But I think a 6. I don't think it was a great performance by the referee, but like you said, much better than what we've had. Very quickly as well, this is a good question. I saw people debating this on the timeline. This is from Gerpri. If Wolves' form continues and Gary O'Neill's pedigree grows, Will the FA be sniffing around in post Euros as Southgate's successor, or do you think it's too early for him, Finn?
Maybe a little bit early, but I don't know, because he's in
there. They want to stay English, don't they, you reckon?
Yeah, and I don't think I'd advise him to if I was sort of, if he'd asked me if I was his mate, I don't know whether I'd advise him to do it at that point. I don't know. But there is a danger, because they can never get the top kind of, like, it was always Eddie Howe for a while, but now he's got that job in the Champions League. It's sort of like, oh no, he wouldn't do that.
Right, so, he might not last much longer there, though, to be fair. They're maybe going in the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, yeah, a few more injuries, and yeah, I don't think they'll win a game for a while. So that's an interesting one. I hadn't really considered it ever. Maybe. Don't worry, me. God, we've only just, one loss in seven, and it's like, yeah, the manager's going to go. Maybe. Oof. I don't know.
You know what, though, Jordan, as well? I think that would be, and obviously we don't know, such a long way to go, and things change within like a couple of weeks in football, but you know, Graham Potter might be on the list as well if he doesn't get, say Rogers make Eddie Howe goes and then Potter gets that job. I think, if O'Neill carries on doing what he's doing and gets into a solid top half finish and carries on with the good press, you know, nationwide, I think stuff like that, Sky Sports thing, will certainly help. And the FA probably would consider it. But as a Wolves fan, can you be peed off with him if you've got a manager that's just gone on to get arguably one of the biggest jobs, or the biggest job in the country, really?
I don't, speaking hypothetically, by the way.
I was going to say, look at us talking about this.
No, you could never be pissed off about, you know, it's the pinnacle, isn't it, for an English person representing your country, whether that's managing them or playing for them. It's as good as it gets. Why not? You know, why couldn't he get the job? You know, if they want to keep it English and not, you know, not appoint a foreign manager, if it hasn't really worked out in the past. But again, I'm not like a massive Southgate fan, but I also feel it's been the most successful England manager in our lifetime.
For sure.
I think whoever goes in next are going to get compared to him. And this team should win stuff when we're talking nationally now. So would you want that burden, that pressure on you? Because even if you lose in a final, you're still going to be berated for not winning it. So it'd be interesting.
Where do you go from them? England job as well? Like, where's Southgate going to go from this?
He had been linked with some club jobs, hasn't he? But I don't think he'd ever done that well at a club level, to be fair. Whereas Hodgson had almost already proved it at a club level.
Yeah, well, Southgate had got Middlesbrough to the UEFA Cup final than when he was at Borough back in the day.
Years ago, though.
That was a question that I've been asked, like, even though it was a pub question about 6 months ago, and you know, it's right. It's like, if Southgate, again, I don't know, we're going to Gareth Southgate now, but if Southgate leaves England, which Premier League team would take Gareth Southgate?
Yeah.
None of the top six would take Gareth Southgate.
He was linked with United, wasn't he, at one point? Remember that? A few years ago. Man United. He wouldn't, though, would he? I don't know.
Interesting, isn't it?
I think he's been out of the club game too long.
Yeah, I think the England job will go to Lee Carsley, personally, because I think that's what they did with Southgate, to take the under-21 manager. And he won the tournament, didn't he, in the summer? So, easy.
Who knows? Jordan, we've had one directed at you, apparently. If Jordan's in, who had the better weekend, Pablo Sarabia or Josh Dobbs?
I don't know
who that is.
So Josh Dobbs, for non-NFL fans, is a Minnesota Vikings new quarterback. So our quarterback tore his Achilles 2 weeks ago, and we got someone from we traded a backup from a team who were like the worst team in the league, and we've won two games on the back-to-back. So out of the blue, I'll go Pablo Sarabia just because he's been down in the dumps. it's a Wolves podcast as well, but no. Like, Josh Dobbs had his time in the sun last week for doing what he did. So, do it back to back, he's obviously just very good. Whereas Sarabia, you know, people have been questioning him. And I can't get that volley out of my head, unfortunately. It's got to be Sarabia.
Finn, Chris has asked, best thing to have on toast?
Oh, I was having the Marmite debate today. It's not the best, but I'm a big, big, strong Marmite.
Never had Marmite before.
Defender.
Have you ever tried it?
Have you not?
It's horrible.
I love mum. Yeah, I was having that debate today. I really like it, but it's not best. You can't beat cheese and beans, maybe. Like,
No way.
If you're treating yourself, that's more of a lunch thing. Like, I'm going somewhere in that wheelhouse. Like, yeah, I'll go cheese and beans. Yeah, cheese and beans.
That's like any Americans listening to this are probably thinking, what are they on about? Because I don't think baked beans isn't a big thing over in America, is it?
Yeah, well, they can find out. It's brilliant.
I don't like baked beans either. You know, I'm not a fan of ketchup and like just the sauce. I'm I just don't like it, the texture of it. Like, I think cheese on toast is one of the most underrated meals of all time.
Cheese, like grilled though, like.
Oh God, yeah. Proper Cathedral City cheese. Get it. Oh, slightly burnt toast.
To be fair though, that with ketchup is elite. And I know you don't like ketchup, but like the cheese on toast and ketchup, like, is elite. To be fair, it's almost like a proper deep pizza.
Would any egg get in there? For you, like any egg version toast, of an egg.
Toast.
No, like what? Yeah, I don't know. What would I get? I had scrambled
egg and toast.
With not butter, with some. What's the other thing called?
Marjorie?
Escaping me. Philadelphia. That was dead nice. Try that. No, was it Philadelphia? Not Philadelphia. You know, like Laughing Cow, like those things.
Margarine. Huh? Oh, like the cheese spread. Like,
yeah, that was nice. Yeah. Cheese spread. Yeah, scrambled egg. I think
what about jam? We're forgetting a bit of butter and jam on it. Butter and the jam, mate. Elite, that is.
No? I've got my
nan. Fan over here.
My nan buys me anything Vimto that she can find, and she stumbled across Vimto jam. I still haven't tried it yet. It's still in the cupboard.
What about
jam on toast? I don't know that it works.
Marmalade? No? I mean, we go back to the 1970s Paddington. Or something.
Yeah.
Lemon curd, I've not had that in years, but lemon curd is legit, you know.
Thank you very much for the questions. I always like those random ones anyway to finish us off.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. But guys, it's been a pleasure as always. Remember, listeners and viewers, the Molyneux Sleepout is on Friday. If anybody else does wish to contribute towards our page, it would mean a hell of a lot. Before we finish off though, Jord, where can people find you if they wish?
Jordan7 on Twitter and Instagram.
Gosh, Jordan Russell on the LinkedIn still?
On the LinkedIn, of course, absolutely, yeah. Flying.
On one of the, very quick tangent, on one of the dating apps I was on today, someone had a LinkedIn in their bio.
You're not joking, man.
No, I swear to God.
What was their job?
Yeah, it's got to be a good job put, like, for that, surely.
It's like one of the prompts was LinkedIn and her real name. So, gal's there for business,
what,
mate.
Did you click on it? Pleasure. What did she do?
Yeah,
I didn't search her. No. If she was fit, then maybe.
She's definitely like got the call. She's either like a stunt double pilot. There's no way you're putting on LinkedIn. You're not going to put on LinkedIn, I'm a business analyst for ABC Limited. Like, for it. Like, she's obviously got something. Yeah, it's got to be. You've got to find it.
I don't know what it was.
Get
it
back on. Yeah, mate.
Mate, I can't. It was a foreign name. I think she was like Polish or something. So I'd have to try. I won't be able to find it now. Finn, where can people find you if they wish?
At the Molyneux Sleepout on Friday. Me and Dave don't tempt you enough, then you could meet Carl Akimi, Carl Henry, SX, the rapper. You've got the mayor of Wolverhampton. You've got leader of the council. You've got EAB Skills, Mark Rhodes. You've got, who else have we got here? Reaper as well. We've got Mitch Lane, who does the great meals on TikTok. There's a great group of people going, Gary Poundland, now Pharrell. So yeah, it's going to be a great time. Finners on everything. Hopefully see you all there and donate. As you say, that's this Friday. So really looking forward to that. Links will be in the description. And yeah, hopefully see a lot of you there.
Fingers crossed. And I'm at Dave as a Party on Twitter and Instagram. And we are Talking Wolves everywhere on all socials. We will be back after the Fulham game. We'll have to decide when we're actually going to record that because the Fulham game is the Monday night. But we're back for obviously the match preview and stuff. And hopefully maybe a couple of transfer updates before then if we do get some more transfer news because there have been little bits and pieces. If you're watching on YouTube, please feel free to hit the like button and subscribe to the channel. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, please do leave us a 5-star review. It does mean a lot. Enjoy the international break, guys. Enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll all catch you very, very soon.